I'll quickly review where we are up till this point. The title of this is The Secret Path Out of Spiritual Dryness. And I said at the very beginning, I'm going to tell you the secret right away. And then we're going to go into it. I said, I believe the secret is finding and removing idolatry in your life. That really is the secret. So now that we know that, then we have to figure out what that means. And then we took a look and found out that idolatry is a much bigger theme in the Bible than we realize. 700 verses, every single book of the Bible. We talked about how we need to emphasize the things the Bible emphasizes. And often in our Western cultures, we give this a very cursory or superficial look. And how can we understand this in much more depth? And so then it also comes to the first commandments that there be no other gods. And that's why your book is titled No Other Gods. And then we said, well, how would we kind of get some signs that idolatry were there? And we went to Jeremiah 17, which to me is just a wonderful spiritual Geiger counter, because it describes some about the fact that idolatry's what it's like. It's written with an iron tool on the tablets of our hearts and on the horns of our altar. Okay, remember that? So just think, it's deep. It's mixed with our true worship. It's mixed with our family systems. We remember going to the mountains and having picnics that were wonderful, but mixed into it was idolatry. And then we went on and said, here are seven signs of idolatry. Things like you're like a dry brush in the desert. You don't see blessing when it comes. You have an experience of being cursed in that area, different things like that. And then we put up another picture of what it's like when we trust in God, not in flesh. And so that's quickly bringing us up to the point right now. And then I said something that I can't prove, but it's my hypothesis for you today, is that the seven idols that were moved in 2 Kings 23 are actually archetypes. They're families of idols. And understanding those different families of idols will help me kind of discern, after I get the Geiger counter, what exactly is going on beneath the surface, if I understand what this idol was accomplishing and how it worked. So now we're gonna head deeper into those idols, and you might have some versions of Baal in your life. You might have some versions of Asherah, versions of Ashtoreth, and understanding how that particular, because we said the heart is an idol factory, so your heart is producing those things, and our hearts are the same. So why does your heart produce that particular kind of idol? How does it work and what is it like? So that's up till the present. So we're ready to go with that. So now we're going to dig deeper into these archetypes, and we'll start with Baal, who is a storm god. And in your notes, you see this part from 2 Kings 23. The king commanded Hilkiah the high priest and the priests of the second order and the keepers of the threshold to bring out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels made for Baal. And again, we said, bring out of the temple of the Lord all of the vessels made for Baal, for Asherah, and for all the host of heaven. He burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried their ashes to Bethel. And he deposed the priests whom the kings of Judah had ordained to make offerings in the high places at the cities of Judah and around Jerusalem, those who burned incense to Baal. So we've got some questions here. Where was Baal worship located? So you've got it written down there, but you also get it from the text. It was in the temple and on high places. That's kind of interesting. There are some idols that were worshipped on low places and some idols that were worshipped on high places. You might worship on a low place something you'd want to hide. On a high place, you're pretty proud of this. Okay, this is a high place in the cities of Jerusalem, Judah, and around Jerusalem. And what was he like? What was Baal like? Well, he's called the storm god, and his name means owner, master, or lord. The storm god, owner, master, or lord. And this is what he looks like. So here's a picture of what he looks like. Two pictures. He looks pretty cool, doesn't he? He's a good guy. This is attractive. This is why you'd want him on the top of a mountain. So let me just explain a little bit about him. He's got in his left hand, he has lightning that turns into a spear. So again, he's a storm god. So when there's lightning, he can grab it and direct it. He's just in charge of those things like storms, and he turns it into a spear. In his right hand, he holds a club, or you can see there's kind of a branch that he uses. And most of the pictures of Baal is what he's called if we would pronounce it correctly, have horns on it that symbolize strength. So he's got horns on his head. And this guy is really attractive. He has power over rain, wind, and clouds, which means he can also, if there's a storm, he can bring it under control, but he can also direct the storm towards you and make it rain. So this is, you know, the superhero. So he can bring things under control, but also get it your direction, which rain is a very valuable thing. Saul, Jonathan, David had sons that were named after Baal. So this really got mixed in. He would make his way into names because he was kind of a hero. His offerings consist of incense, symbols of prayer, and they had special clothes. So what does he remind you of in, by the way, in, we have modern mythology, like the Marvel Universe, you know? So it's interesting how these themes repeat all and over and again. Who are some Baals that you know? Okay, Tor, big time. Who else? Actually, there's a lot of these because Baal is really popular. Yeah, Zeus. Actually, he might be something else too, so we'll get back to that. But, Iron Man, Superman. What's that? Captain America, exactly. Yeah. So, now actually, this will be interesting because Captain America could, no, he'd probably be this. No, he'd be a Baal. So, but this is like, you know, we love these stories because he comes in and can just bring everything under control, and he's cool, and we love him. I mean, he's just really amazing. Now, he shows up everywhere. So not very far from here, I live right across the border in the Czech Republic, and there's a mountain where it's called Radagast. There's a mountain, so I don't know if you know anything about this, and there's a Radagast on the top, you know, because from the Czech Republic, and it's also a beer, Radagast. So he's an ancient god that was worshipped about, 80 kilometers from here. He kind of looks like Baal, doesn't he? Do you see the horns on his head? Do you see instead of a spear, he's got a hammer? And then there's this sense, and he could also bring the rain and prosperity. So there's this strength that will solve my problems. You'll see versions of Baal in every culture, this storm god that's going to this Radagast. Life is bitter, Bohodik, right? Yeah. So how is he worshipped? He was worshipped with sacred vessels, with priests, offering incense. If you look down at your list, there's also some texts, and we're going to move fast through these, but this would be fun for you to study sometime, go in a little bit deeper, so that's why I'm giving you more than we're going to cover here. But they would bow down. Ooh, you're great. They would, you yoke yourself with Baal. So it means I want to connect myself with this power that will just bring the storm under control and send the rain my direction. There were sacred pillars or sacred stones that they were, they became Beth-Els, so houses of God. So a stone would become a place where this deity would dwell, and it would be a sacred pillar or sacred stone. They had special clothes. Isn't it interesting how in the Marvel Universe, they always have special clothes? Isn't that really interesting? Because you put those clothes on, wow, you look the part. And they also had, the priests had special Superman clothes. Pretty interesting. Calf worship. Sometimes a calf would be the embodiment of Baal. So the calf worship was also Baal worship because Baal would inhabit that calf. Altars and images, and sometimes even burning suns in the offering of fire, prophesying in his name. So, what does he give me? Now, power. Power, power, power. Well, what kind of power? Think about.
Authority.
Yeah, authority, yeah. Why would I need that? Yeah, to bring bad things under control and to hold it in my hands. Yeah, to push the rain my direction, right? We'll also find that there's another God that brings prosperity, but in a different way. This is kind of the power God, but it's the power, like good power, like attractive power, Superman power. What? Protection, certainly could totally bring protection. And actually, this is what we, protection, power, control, but in really attractive kinds of ways. Yeah. Say that again. It certainly could. Now, and you're actually getting ahead to what are the current manifestations of this. It can be a lot of different things. What, when I need power, protection, or control, do I turn to God or do I turn to something else? See, remember how we talked about a heart that turns, you turn to the strong arm of the flesh, Jeremiah 17, or a heart that turns to God. And there could be a number of things that when I go, I need power, I need control, I need protection. God? No, this. And I turn to that, and then that becomes the thing that I worship by offering prayers of different kinds, by dressing up in certain ways, right? By bowing down. Think of these. Actually, the symbolism is very powerful when we think of this, because those physical activities represented expressions of the heart that we also do. So kind of get these images in your mind. It can help you spot. Bowing down, Lord, your Lord. Even in the Marvel movies, there's this, Superman is here. So how might that heart desire to turn away from God, who's the Lord in my life? Like God, who can bring the storm under control? Well, my God can. Who can really be my protector? God can, of course. So when I need to bring things under control, or I need protection, or I need power, I should be turning to the source of power. What are other things I could turn to rather than that when I need something outside of myself? What does Baal look like today? And here are various places. Now, one of the things that to me is very interesting is studying the archetypes is they help me understand what that object is achieving in my life. Sometimes we say idols, money, sex, power, which all those can be. But actually, money can be a Baal, and it can also be an Asherah, or it can be an Ashtoreth, we're going to find out. Because money can be, or it can even be a Molech. We'll get to that in a minute. Money can be, what is money achieving? Some people are afraid of money. Some people, money gives them power. For some people, money buys them comfort. And so there's different things that money is achieving, just like a tree. And money's not bad in and of itself, but the love of money is this root of all evil. So a tree or a stone was not bad in itself, but then they would worship it. And a tree could be, anyways, it can embody different things. And so it's interesting to look, does money for me become a Baal? Here's some of the other ones. Power. So, and this would be, probably you said, a woman might go towards manipulation. A man, us men, we love just pushing power, strength, right? And just dominating. We might use anger to take control of a situation. So you're in an argument, and this argument's not going well. I can grab at the Baal of anger and shut you up. And now I've taken the storm of this conversation, and it's under my control because of the Baal of anger that I've used to run you over. Okay, so that can be something like that. Strength, education. Some people think if I can get enough degrees, enough different things, then I will have power. Then I will have power. Then I will have authority. Powerful friends. Some people do that. They just try to attach themselves to people. You're somewhat famous. I'm your friend. Now you're my Baal. Now I'm attached to you. And everywhere we go, we're fine because Baal, I love you. you're my friend. So people do that. They'll attach themselves to powerful people. Manipulation, we had this. And then just lack of submission or title or position. Let me give you a quick example of how this can be like that. That happened to me just about a year ago. I was down in Croatia meeting with one of our team leaders there. And it was a tense situation. Things really weren't going well. And I wasn't getting kind of the results I was hoping to get out of the conversation. And as we were driving, I'm driving up from Zagreb, crossing the border into Slovenia. And there's something else I think of that I need to pass on to our team leader there. So I'm driving along, my wife's driving, and I get on the phone and start talking to this teammate of mine. And we finish, and my wife says, "Wow, that was an unpleasant conversation." And I said, "What do you mean unpleasant?" She said, "Well, you were just pushing the entire time." I said, "What do you mean pushing?" She said, "She said your voice was loud. It felt like you were interrupting him. It just felt like you were using force in the conversation, kind of to get your way." And I said, "No, you're not. No, it's because we're in the car, and I'm talking on the phone. I'm just talking louder than you think because I'm on the phone." And then, "No, it's not that." And she says, "Well, you know, you talk sometimes to me that way." Now, I'm always being some. "What are you doing?" Now, one of the things is when you start getting some of the tools of idolatry, it actually helps you in conversation and even in our marriage to talk about things maybe you wouldn't talk about otherwise. So she says, "I think there's something there. It just feels like that there's some energy behind that that's not energy from God. It just doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel like I'm not seeing God there. I don't feel his presence. It's just something's wrong with that." And I said, "Well, I don't know. I don't know if anything's there." And then she says, "Well, why don't you ask God?" So we're going to talk about this a little bit later on, how in Jeremiah 17 it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? But I, the Lord, search the heart." So when we get into idols, so even some of the questions you're asking, we go a ways, but we then need to stop and actually ask for the Holy Spirit's illumination, because we actually won't be able to figure it out. We need the Lord to search the heart. That's why David said in Psalm 51, he says, "Search my heart, test my anxious thoughts." We actually need help. So we're driving along and she says, "Well, why don't you ask God?" And I said, "Well, I mean, we're in the car." She says, "That doesn't matter. I'm driving." "Okay." So I stop and I say, "God, my wife is sensing something here and I'm not sensing anything. Holy Spirit, just show me." And then I just stopped and just listened to the Spirit. And this is something I'd encourage you to do in this area, is actually ask questions of the Lord and listen to his Spirit. Like, "God, I'm seeing something here. Is there?" And then actually practice some listening prayer, because the Holy Spirit can do that. So I just stop and I ask a question. I'm in the car, close my eyes, I pray, and I just listen. And then it was like, I don't know if the Holy Spirit's ever done this, like God just rolled a film back in my life and it showed me a bunch of conversations where I've done the same thing. You know, he just reminded me, boom, that you did it here and you did it here and you did it here. And this thing that your wife is drawing attention to, it's actually a pattern in your life. And then I started thinking about why, and all of those were places where I needed an outcome and I wasn't getting it, but what I was reaching for was Baal to get my outcome, right? There's a storm. There was a storm on our team. There was something that I felt like the team leader needed, and I wasn't getting the storm under control, so what am I going to do? I'm going to use force. I'm going to push my personality and just push this around the corner. But instead of stopping and saying, "God, I need your power right now." See, my heart could turn somewhere different. "I need your power right now. There's a storm. I need your control." And also in those spots, I was a little scared for the situation on that team and a little afraid. But I reached for power to accomplish what I wanted instead of reaching for God's power. You understand the difference? I needed power, but so what do? I talk louder, I push, I interrupt. I'm using my power rather than God's power. And so I went, "Oh man, I think this is a pattern." And so then my wife said, "Well, you know what to do about that." And we're gonna talk about this. There's some steps of repentance and faith that are really powerful in cleaning out idols. We need to get all the way there. I'm not going to get ahead of ourselves. But there's ways of actually directly addressing some of these areas that can bring significant breakthroughs. So I'm kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit. But I just want to show you how understanding, when she asked that, and then I went, "Oh, that's a Baal. That's a Baal. That's just classic. I see him there, and he looks cool. I mean, he looks cool. I actually like this, but I'm not turning to God, and it can be unpleasant for people around me." And this is Asherah. the goddess of fertility. And you'll have this in your text, and we saw this. He took the Asherah pole from the temple of the Lord, and he ground it to path, and he said he also tore down the quarters of the male shrine prostitutes. Okay, so to pick up some of the symbolism that's going on, there is a pole, and there are male shrine prostitutes. They were in the temple of the Lord. Okay, this is right in the temple of the Lord. The quarters where the women did weaving for Asherah. And you'll notice he brought all the high the priests from the towns of Judah and desecrated the high places from Geba to Beersheba, where the priests burned incense. He broke down the gateway at the entrance of the gate of Josiah, the city governor, which is on the left of the city gates. And some of these he's moving in and out of Baal and Asherah. Baal and Asherah were kind of top two for, that's why we're starting with them, and they're quite the duo. Josiah smashed the sacred stones and cut down the Asherah poles and covered the sites with human bones. He burned a high place and ground it to powder and burned the Asherah pole also. You see in verse 15. So here's some questions. Where was Asherah worship located? And here we find, again, in the temple of the Lord, on the high places at the cities. So both Baal and Asherah are high place gods. They're gods that you're not ashamed of. They're gods that or goddesses that actually look aspirational, look interesting, around wooden Asherah poles and in gates to cities. And by the way, there's various modern day, expressions of this, maypoles or Asherah poles. You know, the maypole and you weave around it, and maypoles are classic. It's a spring act in May, and the reason why they have the pole and they're weaving around it is it goes back to ancient traditions about the you want fertility in the spring. You want to make sure that the flowers are coming out and things like that, and you want to make sure you have a good harvest. So there's some interesting traditions that we have that we've forgotten about that actually go back to ancient idolatry. And it was on the gates to cities. So you saw that he tore down. Why did he tear down the gate? Well, because there was Asherah worship right on the gate into the city. What was she like? Well, sometimes she's falsely seen as the, well, actually, let's take a look at her so we get a picture of what she looks like. Sometimes she was falsely seen as the consort of Yahweh, which the consort means the partner, the female alternative version to Yahweh, or as the female alternative version to Baal. So it's the kind of flip side. And she's really, by the way, sometimes she's called the Queen of Heaven, which we're going to get to in a minute, which has very interesting implications for some things that go on today. But you can just make some observations from looking at her. What would you say from looking at her? She looks different than Baal. What do you see in her? She's feminine. What, but a particular kind of feminine. What kind of feminine is she?
Wide
hips for bearing children, right? Because another feminine god we're going to get into that has different characteristics. But what else? So, what kind of feminine? Any more?
Yeah.
I mean, this is really the mother instincts of femininity, the nurturing, warm. This is someone that you want. This is mom, the best version of mom. All of that nurturing, gentle instinct you can. But she's also, I mean, she's well endowed, but in a very motherly kind of way, not in a pornographic kind of way. This is just like, wow, mom. Everything that mom should have, she has lots of. Anything else? She's taking care of people around her. Right? Just so it's this taking care of you. You need a popsicle, ice cream, I'll give that to you. It's a meal. This is again, it's this mother nurture care. What else?
It has a feeling of this abundance and comfort.
Do you see all the abundance? Like the goats are just kind of coming towards her. She has lots of milk, so that's emphasized. Yeah, so you see, this is actually a figurine. If you go to Israel, you'll see lots of these clay figurines. They've dug out thousands of these, and these are small Asher. You'd have them in the house. But it's emphasizing her milk, okay? That she can provide you this nurture, this what you need. So it's really emphasizing her ability to do that. Anything else? Yeah, look at that. I mean, she's got a smile on her face. And it doesn't look like she's working hard to do this. She just is, it's just kind of flowing out. So harvest, abundance, we'll take care of all this. Look at that beautiful skirt she's got on. And actually she's treading on grapes at the same time. Look at all that she's managing. She's getting the wine, she's got the, yeah, but it's Superwoman in a really different way. Like, it's not like Baal Superwoman. This is wonderful. Kind of without effort, just providing everything we need. Okay, so kind of get that picture in your mind. So, because these are really distinct pictures, they're in different kinds of ways. Now, what was she like? There were male shrine prostitutes, which this was interesting, in the temple. So sometimes what would happen would be women would have sex with male shrine prostitutes to stimulate their fertility. I don't know. It's or even to get the harvest. And by the way, there's in Acts, Paul runs into a version of this that gets him kicked out of a city in Asia Minor. And this was a version, do you remember that? There was a particular temple that was very well known. What was that temple? Diana, or it was Artemis, okay? Diana, Artemis, and Asherah are all the same thing. It's the fertility goddess. And if you go to Ephesus, you can see pictures of her. And actually, that one, she has like 20 breasts in there. So it's just this emphasis on fertility. And when they were crying in the big amphitheater of Ephesus, crying, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." Okay, you see why you'd want this kind of goddess. This is a wonderful goddess, and why even it's tied into everywhere where Paul says in Timothy, "God will protect you in childbirth." Why was that? Because they were going, if I don't worship Artemis, I'll be protected in childbirth. So this Asherah helps you in childbirth too. It's all about this fertility. So we'll see, they wove things. So there's this creativity that's associated with her. Again, burning incense. It's also originally borrowed from Assyria. And she was the wife of the war god Assur, the national god of Assyria. So this is kind of the mother-wife god, goddess of fertility, helps women bear children. And then the trunk or stone that symbolized Asherah was regarded as a Beth-El, a house of deity. They were placed on high places under trees, and you can see something. And then how was she worshipped? She was worshipped in really family ways. You basically worshipped her with a picnic. The whole family would go to the top of the mountain, and there were, I don't know if any of your cultures do, around Easter, you do cakes that are in the shape of a lamb. You do those? Okay. Actually, some of that dates way back, because what they would do is they would have a form like that was an Asherah. Was a big-breasted woman, and they would make seed cakes, raisin cakes. Yeah, they're down here. They're raisin cakes, and they would bake them, and so you'd have a cake in the form of Asherah. And so obviously Christians they wanted to kind of take this, so then they did it in a lamb, and do it at Easter, which is in the spring. So some of the holidays that we celebrate are actually have been kind of taken over for paganism. And have their roots way, way back. But that's, so think of spring, you're going to the mountain, you have this picnic, you eat these raisin cakes that are in the shape of that right there. And this is a wonderful time with your family. Or there's offerings and drink offerings, you cook some things, you eat them, sacred prostitution, sacred weaving, feasts that were associated. So this is really pleasant, isn't it? Oh, there! I was in Jerusalem a while ago, and you can go into one of the antique shops, and you see all kinds of versions of Asherah there, fertility goddesses, and even dating back to Egyptian ones. Now here, I was down in Croatia and went into a city. This is a city, I can't remember the name of it, it's on an island, but there's a church there, and this is on the ceiling of the church. What does that look like?
Mary.
And Mariology and the worship of Mary is classic Asherah worship. It's the mother goddess. It's the consort of Yahweh. So this is really interesting how the human heart is just keeps generating this. We need a mother god to go beside the father god, because who's going to be the warm, nurturing side of God? We need that. We need mom who's going to talk to God about this. And the worship of Mary is actually classic Asherah worship. This is in Egypt. So if you go to Egypt, you can find Isis nurturing Horus. So I don't know if you've heard of that Egyptian. So again, do you see that this picture of there's this male god that needs to be nurtured into? So that's actually a man, but Isis as the mother god is bringing the male god to life. Anyways, these stories repeat themselves in the mother god, the nurturing god. How is she worshiped? What does she give me? She gives me fruitfulness or prosperity. What does Asherah look like today? Well, it can be some of these same things. Does money give me power, or does money give me fruitfulness and prosperity? So I don't have to worry about the future because I have everything I need, and I have everything I need for years. And there's lots of grapes. Or is money my way of getting things under control? So money can be different. Possessions can be like this. Actually, marriage can be an Asherah for someone who's single. And they could say that what will make my life prosperous is to get married. If only I could get married, that would be the source of prosperity and stability and provide that. And we know that really only God can do that. A career. Some people worship their career and their career path. And if I have the right career and the right career path, then spring will come. There will be lots of fruit. Again, successful friends. Clothes. I worship clothes. Malls, shopping. Retail therapy. Actually, some people are really like this. They go out and they shop and they weave. You know, the shopping can be weaving, and it can give you a sense of release. Like, I was real frustrated, but I went out and shopped, and it can be kind of a drug, that weaving for Asherah. Self-help techniques. So I'm gonna get everything together because of this new book that's told me all of the tips, and I now know how to do makeup right and get myself healthy. And again, those things aren't necessarily bad, but are they my source of hope? Facebook likes, image. Some people, their Asherah is their children. If their children are successful, then they are successful. If their children are fruitful and they put lots of weight on their children to be that which makes their life work. And then rather than serving their children, their children are really, I want you to be in the best school because I couldn't be. And the fact that you're in the best school will give me prosperity. I want you to make a lot of money because I couldn't. But then you're going to like make a lot of money. And then when I'm old, I have security because my son or daughter is really successful. And there can be lots of pressure put on kids to make life prosperous and fruitful for their parents. And kids, that's a hard burden for kids to carry. We talked about how actually you destroy your idols. The weight you put on them is too much, and that can be very destructive. And I gave you an example yesterday. I talked about my to-do list. Remember that? And I said we had a family god of, what I realized later on was that it was a god of productivity. So for me, a day was great if I got lots and lots done, and a day was bad if I didn't get much done. Now think about that. What if I spent a day in fasting and prayer? I don't get anything done. I have nothing to show for it at the end of the day. Well, but that's a very wonderful spiritual activity. You can see how my idol could pull my heart away from God and kind of drive me into frantic working for a lot of things. Here's one of the things I recognized was I literally would live by my to-do list. Every day, the to-do list, get done. And I'd tell my wife, she'd say, how was your day? Hey, I think I got 8 of the 10 things on my list done. Literally, it was my dialogue all the time. Oh man, I started going out and it didn't work. And so it's how I measured my day. It's how I measured my worth. It's how I measured just all kinds of different things. But it's also a terrible master, because I would find as I got towards the end of my to-do list that I would actually get more and more frustrated, because I recognized I was close to my goal and I was still empty. See, and this is the interesting thing about idols are like drugs. What happens is they promise lots and deliver little, and they loop us into even more addiction to them. So I'm getting to the end of my list and it's not giving me what I need. I become even more frantic in trying to work it harder because I'm committed to that. So it's very interesting how idols work. It's a false fulfillment of a true need. And just like drugs or alcohol give you a false fulfillment of a true need, but because of that can be extremely addictive, because they do provide it for a little while, and then they increase your hunger for that same thing. And it's why people who worship money are never satisfied with their money. People who worship sex never have enough sex. The pornography is never enough. People who have who worship power, that it never can get enough power. It will actually be addictive, and it will consume them, and it can be power because it has that particular loop, because we aren't getting it from the right place.